Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One.
Last week, a workman's cafe in the small town of Bourges in France was flooded with phone calls from customers wanting to book tables. It happened after Michelin, the company that publishes highly influential restaurant guides, awarded it with a prestigious star. Imagine how astonished reporters and prospective customers were when they turned up at an inexpensive eatery with plastic tablecloths. A Michelin guide representative soon phoned the owner to apologize. It turned out that they had confused the cafe with a more refined establishment of the same name and a similar address located near Paris.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Last week, a workman's cafe in the small town of Bourges in France was flooded with phone calls from customers wanting to book tables. It happened after Michelin, the company that publishes highly influential restaurant guides, awarded it with a prestigious star. Imagine how astonished reporters and prospective customers were when they turned up at an inexpensive eatery with plastic tablecloths. A Michelin guide representative soon phoned the owner to apologize. It turned out that they had confused the cafe with a more refined establishment of the same name and a similar address located near Paris.
Two. In the US, about 30 million children take part in some form of organized sporting events and suffer from 3.5 million injuries each year. According to surveys, approximately one-third of all the injuries which occur in childhood result from doing sports, and by far the most common are sprains and strains. Obviously, some sports are more risk-prone than others. I'm sure that contact sports like football carry a higher risk of injury than non-contact sports such as swimming. Interestingly, a recently published large-scale study has revealed that regardless of the type of sport we do, the majority of injuries occur due to overtraining.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
In the US, about 30 million children take part in some form of organized sporting events and suffer from 3.5 million injuries each year. According to surveys, approximately one-third of all the injuries which occur in childhood result from doing sports, and by far the most common are sprains and strains. Obviously, some sports are more risk-prone than others. I'm sure that contact sports like football carry a higher risk of injury than non-contact sports such as swimming. Interestingly, a recently published large-scale study has revealed that regardless of the type of sport we do, the majority of injuries occur due to overtraining. Three.
Imagine a seminar attended by 50 people during which they are taken to a room full of balloons and told to find the balloon with their name written on it within 5 minutes. Usually you'd expect everyone to be frantically searching for the right balloon, pushing each other. Some might even get hurt in the process. However, I decided to apply a different method. I instructed people to randomly pick up a balloon and shout the name written on it. The owner would then step forward to collect their balloon. This way, within minutes, everyone had their balloons. If you want your team to work efficiently, it's crucial to select the most effective method of coping with the job. Why not carry out both variants of this experiment? Make sure your employees can see the difference.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Imagine a seminar attended by 50 people, during which they are taken to a room full of balloons and told to find the balloon with their name written on it within 5 minutes. Usually you'd expect everyone to be frantically searching for the right balloon, pushing each other. Some might even get hurt in the process. However, I decided to apply a different method. I instructed people to randomly pick up a balloon and shout the name written on it. The owner would then step forward to collect their balloon. This way, within minutes, everyone had their balloons. If you want your team to work efficiently, it's crucial to select the most effective method of coping with the job. Why not carry out both variants of this experiment? Make sure your employees can see the difference.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Speaker 1. 5 years ago, my plane from New York to Washington was delayed because one of its screws had come loose. It turned out that a very specific screw had to be taken from a similar plane that was due to land shortly after. An hour passed and we were still waiting to board. Had I decided on the flight scheduled a bit later than mine, I'd have already reached my destination. Instead, for the next hour or so, I listened to frequent updates on the whereabouts of the screw, which only made me more frustrated. Can you believe it? A screw causing a 2-hour delay? Incredible! Was the airport warehouse really unable to provide a spare one? Speaker 2.
Generally, I've experienced delays for the most mundane reasons. Absent passengers, technical issues, and the weather. The only out-of-the-ordinary delay I've had was on a flight from Heathrow to Newark. Headwinds were exceptionally strong, so our flight, which was scheduled for 7 hours, in fact took 9. When we reached our destination, it was late at night, and there were only 3 border control officers to process the passengers. We queued for 2 hours and learned that our luggage was still stuck on the plane because there was nobody to deliver it to the terminal. When I finally reached my hotel, I wanted to make a formal complaint, but then decided it wasn't worth it.
Speaker 3. I was flying from Montego Bay to Montreal last month, and our flight was delayed by over 40 minutes. As soon as we got through security in Montego Bay, the departure boards indicated a delay, but no one could tell us why. When we were finally in the air, the pilot informed us that we had taken off late due to unfavorable weather conditions over parts of Florida. However, the next day I learned that the truth was that one of the candidates running for president had been holding a rally in a Miami airport hangar on the day of our flight, and the local airspace had been temporarily closed for security reasons. Speaker 4.
Last month, I was travelling on a rickety jet to Orange County when suddenly the pilot began to experience breathing problems. We had to land at Omaha, which was the nearest airport, to transport him to hospital. The airline was really apologetic, and once we found ourselves in the arrivals hall, we learned that we could spend a night in a luxurious hotel for free before continuing our journey. But that wasn't the end of the surprises. The following day, they put us on a business class flight to Orange County. Well, maybe they suspected that people would demand compensation for the disruption to their journey and wanted to reduce the risk of that happening.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Speaker 1. 5 years ago, my plane from New York to Washington was delayed because one of its screws had come loose. It turned out that a very specific screw had to be taken from a similar plane that was due to land shortly after. An hour passed and we were still waiting to board. Had I decided on the flight scheduled a bit later than mine, I'd have already reached my destination. Instead, for the next hour or so, I listened to frequent updates on the whereabouts of the screw, which only made me more frustrated. Can you believe it? A screw causing a 2-hour delay? Incredible! Was the airport warehouse really unable to provide a spare one? Speaker 2.
Generally, I've experienced delays for the most mundane reasons. Absent passengers, technical issues, and the weather. The only out-of-the-ordinary delay I've had was on a flight from Heathrow to Newark. Headwinds were exceptionally strong, so our flight, which was scheduled for 7 hours, in fact took 9. When we reached our destination, it was late at night, and there were only 3 border control officers to process the passengers. We queued for 2 hours, and learned that our luggage was still stuck on the plane because there was nobody to deliver it to the terminal. When I finally reached my hotel, I wanted to make a formal complaint, but then decided it wasn't worth it.
Speaker 3. I was flying from Montego Bay to Montreal last month, and our flight was delayed by over 40 minutes. As soon as we got through security in Montego Bay, the departure boards indicated a delay, but no one could tell us why. When we were finally in the air, the pilot informed us that we had taken off late due to unfavorable weather conditions over parts of Florida. However, the next day I learned that the truth was that one of the candidates running for president had been holding a rally in a Miami airport hangar on the day of our flight, and the local airspace had been temporarily closed for security reasons. Speaker 4.
Last month, I was travelling on a rickety jet to Orange County when suddenly the pilot began to experience breathing problems. We had to land at Omaha, which was the nearest airport, to transport him to hospital. The airline was really apologetic, and once we found ourselves in the arrivals hall, we learned that we could spend a night in a luxurious hotel for free before continuing our journey. But that wasn't the end of the surprises. The following day, they put us on a business class flight to Orange County. Well, maybe they suspected that people would demand compensation for the disruption to their journey and wanted to reduce the risk of that happening.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Our guest tonight is Jeffrey Rush, the actor who played Albert Einstein in Genius, a series produced by National Geographic. Such a role doesn't come along every day, but initially you refused to take it. Why?
Well, it clashed with the assignments I was helping my wife to finish, and another film I was working on at the time. Since the shooting of Genius was to begin in the middle of all that, I had to turn the offer down. However, the next morning, the director called and asked if it would work for me if they started a few months later. I said yes immediately.
It must have been hard to play such a complex character.
I can tell you it was demanding. In playing Einstein, it was important not to ignore the contradictions of his character, most of which I was already aware of. I had read some time previously about his bohemian youth and comfortable bourgeois adult life. I also knew he was a pacifist, wrongfully branded as the father of the atomic bomb. But there were also some aspects of his life I didn't know about. Only when reading the script did I discover that with advancing age, Einstein started to exhibit quirky behavior, such as appearing in public in pajama trousers or a dressing gown, and wearing his wife's shoes if he couldn't find his own.
How was your appearance transformed to reflect the different stages of Einstein's life?
Well, it was a result of close collaboration with the hair and makeup people. They gave me this sort of crinkled look and soft drooping eyelids. My hair was good enough for Einstein in his 40s. However, different wigs were used for his older years. As for eyebrows, they had to be made considerably thicker, as mine almost don't exist. Many of the reviewers particularly praised my nose. Funnily enough, it was my own.
You share your role with an actor playing the young Einstein. What was your experience of that logistically?
Johnny Flynn was Einstein from his teens, and I took over from around the age of 40. We didn't do any scenes together, but we portrayed the same person, so consistency was crucial for success. Before the filming started, we talked a lot about the script on Skype. A specialist from a drama school was also hired to give us both classes on Einstein's vocal mannerisms. We had to learn to articulate sounds in the same way so that viewers wouldn't hear the difference in our accents. We did some research, but we knew we would have to improvise a lot in acting out our roles. While there is a lot of photographic material on Einstein, newsreel footage which could show us his gestures is scarce. Another thing is that we had no idea what Einstein was like in private. So when the filming started, we carefully observed each other to ensure our portrayals of Einstein were in sync.
And the last question. Is there anything about Einstein that particularly struck you?
Einstein had the right brain in the right place at the right time, which made him a genius. If, however, we leave aside his scientific achievements, we see a man who exhibited a lot of human weaknesses. He had doubts and was prone to depression. And just like everybody else, he was vulnerable to temptation and often experienced mood swings. In many ways, he wasn't much different from the rest of us.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Our guest tonight is Jeffrey Rush, the actor who played Albert Einstein in Genius, a series produced by National Geographic. Such a role doesn't come along every day, but initially you refused to take it. Why?
Well, it clashed with the assignments I was helping my wife to finish, and another film I was working on at the time. Since the shooting of Genius was to begin in the middle of all that, I had to turn the offer down. However, the next morning, the director called and asked if it would work for me if they started a few months later. I said yes immediately.
It must have been hard to play such a complex character.
I can tell you it was demanding. In playing Einstein, it was important not to ignore the contradictions of his character, most of which I was already aware of. I had read some time previously about his bohemian youth and comfortable bourgeois adult life. I also knew he was a pacifist, wrongfully branded as the father of the atomic bomb. But there were also some aspects of his life I didn't know about. Only when reading the script did I discover that with advancing age, Einstein started to exhibit quirky behavior, such as appearing in public in pajama trousers or a dressing gown, and wearing his wife's shoes if he couldn't find his own.
How was your appearance transformed to reflect the different stages of Einstein's life?
Well, it was a result of close collaboration with the hair and makeup people. They gave me this sort of crinkled look and soft drooping eyelids. My hair was good enough for Einstein in his 40s. However, different wigs were used for his older years. As for eyebrows, they had to be made considerably thicker, as mine almost don't exist. Many of the reviewers particularly praised my nose. Funnily enough, it was my own.
You share your role with an actor playing the young Einstein. What was your experience of that logistically?
Johnny Flynn was Einstein from his teens, and I took over from around the age of 40. We didn't do any scenes together, but we portrayed the same person, so consistency was crucial for success. Before the filming started, we talked a lot about the script on Skype. A specialist from a drama school was also hired to give us both classes on Einstein's vocal mannerisms. We had to learn to articulate sounds in the same way, so that viewers wouldn't hear the difference in our accents. We did some research, but we knew we would have to improvise a lot in acting out our roles. While there is a lot of photographic material on Einstein, newsreel footage which could show us his gestures is scarce. Another thing is that we had no idea what Einstein was like in private. So when the filming started, we carefully observed each other to ensure our portrayals of Einstein were in sync.
And the last question, is there anything about Einstein that particularly struck you?
Einstein had the right brain in the right place at the right time, which made him a genius. If, however, we leave aside his scientific achievements, we see a man who exhibited a lot of human weaknesses. He had doubts and was prone to depression. And just like everybody else, he was vulnerable to temptation and often experienced mood swings. In many ways, he wasn't much different from the rest of us.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.